Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Superbeats. I personally take Superbeats when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Superbeats gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at intelligentbeats.com. That's intelligentbeats.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today's subject is homeopathy in light of a recent FDA hearing. It was a two-day hearing where they were trying to decide whether to beef up enforcement policies to rein in the proliferation of homeopathic remedies in the consumer marketplace. They're concerned that, strangely enough, that homeopathic remedies don't work, that there's nothing there, but at the very same time, that they might be harmful. Perhaps they could be harmful, they say, because they could defer people's going to the doctor, getting correct conventional medical treatment. And Dana Ullman is head of the Homeopathic Information Service. He's been a good colleague of mine.
Homeopathic Educational Services.
I'm sorry. What did I say?
Homeopathic
Educational Services in Berkeley, California. Homeopathic.com is their website. He's written lots of great books, including Everybody's Guide to Homeopathic Medicines and many other books, Homeopathy A to Z. You can find his books everywhere. They're virtually every health food store in the country. And so what say ye, Dana? You know, people, they make the argument, and, you know, like, you follow me on this, that people might utilize homeopathic remedies, which they say are potentially inefficacious. There's nothing there. And in over-reliance on these homeopathic remedies, they might not get proper conventional care. So take it away.
Sure. You know, that is certainly possible. But what is more possible is that without homeopathy being around, that people would go to conventional medicine first, and we would then not have that opportunity of the most important words in medicine ever enunciated by the father of medicine himself, Hippocrates: first, do no harm. So there's always risk when you do something versus something else, and yes, it may delay, but maybe sometimes that delay is important. Maybe if for those of us that have any degree of respect for that doctor inside every one of us, that maybe that delay is not only important but essential. And then, of course, there is 200 years of evidence, let alone a slew of scientific studies, let alone a slew of studies on using homeopathy to treat plants and animals and cell cultures. And so when you really look at the whole body of scientific evidence, you cannot help but sense that there is something there. You know, we may not understand it all, but the challenge that homeopathy has is that our medicines are primarily generic drugs, so that no homeopathic company owns one particular drug and then can mine it for big value and sell it for thousands of dollars, you know, a pill. And so there aren't the financial incentives presently in homeopathy. And sadly, today, economics are taking a priority over science, because science has been manipulated. And, you know, it's like, you know, this Australian government report that said that homeopathy was not found to be effective for any condition. But what the report didn't tell you, and what not a single media source told you, is that the authors of that study only chose to acknowledge that something was effective if there was a study with 150 or more subjects in it. And even though there are plenty of studies in homeopathy with 150 subjects, as it turns out, they made a second stipulation that was also completely arbitrary. And they decided that unless there were three studies by three different groups of researchers,
they keep raising the bar, you know, and they said, well, there aren't any good studies. Right.
So what would happen if the Australian government did a report on acupuncture, they would have come to the same conclusion. and many of us feel and know that acupuncture provides some benefit. And guess what? If they did the same thing on botanical medicine, I don't think there'd be more than a couple or a handful of herbs in the whole literature of botanical medicine that would pass these guidelines. And the fact that they hid these guidelines, didn't discuss these guidelines, is part of what I call bad faith and misinformation that people associated with governments are doing now.
And right. It's like moving the goalposts and saying, well, show us your studies, and then they keep pulling back the goalposts. Right. And they disqualify studies that maybe have less than 150 people. They're decent studies.
Now, there have been studies in homeopathy in the British Medical Journal, several, The Lancet, several, rheumatology, chest, pediatrics, cancer. I mean, almost all the leading scientific journals have had studies. And, you know, it's almost as like if Edison were to try and invent the light bulb today, and he tried 9,999 substances before he tried tungsten, and then all of a sudden tungsten he tries and it works, the scientists would say, I'm sorry, but the bulk of your research showed that it didn't work, So let's throw everything, including tungsten, out.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. But, you know, clearly, you know, I think the world of homeopathy is a bifurcated world, because there are master homeopaths like you who really have a lot of training. And, you know, maybe in a moment you can tell us what a homeopathic consultation is like, but I've seen them, and they're very detailed. They last hours, and it really requires a very high degree of skill to prescribe a homeopathic remedy in classic homeopathy. And then there are these mass-produced products which have names like tinnitus, which have names like, you know, which purport to cure certain
things. Our
formulas
of some sort.
They're formulas, and my impression is that homeopathy needs to be individualized. It has to be tailored to a person's individual characteristics. So what's your take on, you know, some of the over-the-counter products that may not be as, shall we say, carefully targeted to a person's individual characteristics?
Well, needless to say, individualized treatment is going to be more effective. However, there are some simple, what I call user-friendly formulas, or user-friendly ingredients that are wonderfully effective. I mean, you know, that French company Boiron has that flu remedy, Oscillococcina.
Right. Perhaps you can tell us about that, too.
And in fact, you know, what's amazing is a lot of people don't even know what that substance is. And as soon as you know what the substance is, it makes complete sense of why it will be effective in treating people with the flu. It's made from the heart and liver of a duck, which means it is, if you will, the bird flu. I don't want to say it is the bird. What I mean is that biologists have determined that ducks are known to carry every known influenza virus in their digestive tract. Mm-hmm. So this homeopathic dose of Oscillococcina is a homeopathic dose of different flu viruses, and thus you then get an immunological reaction to it. Mm-hmm. I don't call this chicken soup. I call it homeopathic duck soup. And the bottom line is that it does work as long as you use it within the first 48 hours of you getting symptoms. That's where it's most effective. You can certainly try it afterwards, and there's no harm in doing so. But the best results happen when you use it within the first 48 hours. And, you know, there have been four big double-blind studies showing that particular remedy to be effective, too.
Yeah, I've used it, and I think it is helpful.
You know, nothing works all the time. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that Oscillococcina will work for everyone every time, because sometimes you really do need to get individualized treatment. So back to your question, yes, individualized treatment is best, but all I can tell you is that a lot of people that have become homeopaths today got introduced to homeopathy because they tried a homeopathic remedy for headaches and it helped them, or they tried a homeopathic remedy for arthritic pain and it helped them. And so, I believe these medicines are basically safe, that they should be regulated. Absolutely. We've always had regulation. I don't even mind if we increase certain regulation, because there are certain homeopathic medicines that really can and should only be prescribed by professional homeopaths. And mind you, what the homeopathic community has done for the last 20 years is they have self-regulated. They've actually taken some of these remedies that used to be broadly available, and the homeopathic pharmacies have said, we are not going to make these remedies available except to practicing homeopaths.
Because they are effective, and they have the potential to maybe, not as much as drugs, but to backfire or engender a reverse reaction in a patient where it's inappropriate.
Well, you know, usually the most common reaction that people get, and what I mean reaction other than a curative, helpful one, is that in a good, I don't know, 10 to 20% of cases of people with chronic illness, they can and will experience what's called a healing crisis.
Right.
So a woman that's having, you know, menstrual cramps may have an early menstrual flow that's clotted. Now, although that could be what some people might call a side effect, this now elimination of clots is a healing effect. It's what we call a healing crisis. Or a person with, coughing may begin to spit up some mucus. Yeah, that's a good sign. Or, in fact, what we also find is that people with various conditions develop a skin rash. And this type of externalization of symptoms is thought to be a good and healing response. So the bottom line is homeopathy provides some useful frameworks for us to really understand healing in a more profound way. And it's at times like this where the FDA is exploring regulating this field that they have to be very careful, because the bottom line is we do not want to clip the wings of an emerging futuristic scientific and health benefit that homeopathy provides.
Well, we don't, but the pharmaceutical industry, I think, has an interest in squelching
that. Yeah. There, Big Pharma is the big gorilla in the room.
Yeah.
That is absolutely true.
Well, okay,
because
so,
they are the biggest advertisers in big media, they've been getting big media support.
Right. So one of the cases cited for, or reasons cited for regulating homeopathic remedies was that under the rubric of homeopathic, go some things that actually have material amounts of certain vitamins. So there was a case, and it's claimed that the harmful effects were exaggerated in this case, but there was a case of something that some of our listeners are familiar with, Zicam, which used to be these nasal swabs that you'd stick up your nose, and they had zinc in them. Well, there was a whole spate of complaints that people had damage to their olfactory nerves, that they had loss of smell and taste, because of exposure, direct exposure of zinc, which is not homeopathic, in this case, material amounts of zinc to their nasal passages. And thus it is thought that some people utilize these liberal homeopathic rules, you know, the rules that were formulated, like you say, in the 1930s, the homeopathic materia medica, as kind of a Trojan horse to get products on the market that might otherwise require more stringent approval. So
I agree with that. And in fact, you know, what my writings to the FDA will include is encouraging following the European guidelines, which require a minimum dilution of at least 3x for a homeopathic remedy to be deemed a homeopathic remedy as distinct from an herbal product.
Right.
And, there are ways that, you know, these questions about changing the FDA regulation can move in a positive direction. And although some of my colleagues, a very, very small percentage of my colleagues, have went into immediate fear reaction of saying, oh, they're going to take homeopathic remedies away from us. Mm-hmm. I've never been of that belief. I don't think that's what's happening at all. They're simply, at this point, exploring. Now, that said, I have, in reading the FDA documents, they have provided some information that is suggesting some bad news, because they first of all quoted a absolutely wrong statistic that sales of homeopathic medicines are $2.9 billion.
Yeah, maybe you said sales of supplements, maybe, you know, that something like that.
And they've included herbal remedies and supplements in that amount entirely.
Boy, that's really dumb.
And in fact, part of my response is showing the FDA that it's closer to a billion, not 3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, that they've quoted the one of the poison control centers' statistics on homeopathic agents. And mind you, this is a really detailed annual report of any substance to which anyone may have overdosed. And yet, sometimes our government gets very sloppy in its statistics. And even though there's great precision throughout this whole toxicological report about which drug or which herb or which supplement was known to have a reaction, when they list homeopathic medicines, they list them not as homeopathic medicines, but, quote, homeopathic agents. And I don't know any consumer, and I don't know any physician, that ever uses the word homeopathic agent. And then I uncovered one example that they described of a problem from a homeopathic agent. And it wasn't from a homeopathic medicine at all. It was from hydrogen peroxide.
Right.
So whenever something doesn't seem to fit into a normal category, the poison control centers are putting it under homeopathic. And so this is a type of sloppy reporting that you know, part of my job, I guess I've self-designated myself as a founding member of the Homeopathic Anti-Defamation League.
That's good.
And I've got a lot of cleanup to do because there's a lot of misinformation that's going around. And I have to admit, some of my own fellow homeopaths, you know, haven't been helping in this process either.
Right. So, you know, in part one, and I encourage listeners to listen to part one, because it's actually quite an ingenious explanation of how homeopathy might work that I hadn't heard of before, and I think we need to get the word out about
Compelling new science.
You call it the silica theory?
Hypothesis.
Okay.
This is why I call homeopathy the original nanopharmacology.
Right.
It's a type of nanomedicine. And now is the time. If you even look, I do a Google under the word, a Google alerts under the word nanomedicine and nanopharmacology, and these words are being used more and more, and there's more and more scientific articles, there's more and more popular articles, and the whole field of modern oncology is even exploring using smaller doses of medicines, and they're noticing that they are having more dramatic effects than they had previously assumed.
But so under that theory, there may be some material content in these products. So how can you assure consumers of homeopathic products that have names like mercury or arsenic or penicillin? These are actually things that are sometimes formulated in homeopathic remedies, that they're not exposed to risk.
Here's the deal.
I think lead is a homeopathic remedy as well. Sometimes.
Absolutely. No, we use a lot of these weird stuff. In fact, we use a lot of different snake venoms. But here is where homeopaths have interacted with toxicologists, and we've been doing so for 200 years. And we've determined together which doses to which are considered basically safe after dilution. So, yes, in homeopathic doses of arsenic, there may be trace amounts of arsenic there, but guess what? And you may not even know this, but actually arsenic in extremely small dose is an important trace mineral for our diet. It's the problem gets to be when it gets in higher amounts. But that's true of all minerals. I mean, you can have too much fluoride. You can have too much calcium. You can have too much of anything. But the bottom line is that we do have a procedure by which certain doses of certain common minerals or potentially toxic agents are deemed by toxicologists today to be basically safe. So, for instance, in certain snake venoms, they would not be available in the over-the-counter dose anything under 8x. So that would be diluted 1 to 10 eight different times. Belladonna, however, can be made available in 3x. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, it's an hallucinogen, but once you dilute it so much that you're even at 3x, it's in small enough dose that even an infant can eat a whole bottle of it and not have any symptoms.
Even straight out belladonna, you know, undiluted was a common medication even up until the 19th century, early 20th century. So it actually has some uses. So, okay, so you've given us a fairly well-rounded view of some of the pushback against FDA concern, government concern, that homeopathic medicines are unregulated, that they're causing serious harm, that they need to be reined in. Did you want to add
additional points? Regulated quite regularly, believe me. We have unannounced searches of homeopathic manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are making certain that we are making what we say we are making.
The GMP regulations, the good manufacturing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the bottom line is the 200 years of safety profile that homeopathic manufacturers have created is something that we are all proud of. And I personally think that... it's the various antagonists to homeopathy that are trying to stir stuff up, and yet I believe that dinosaurs yell and scream the loudest before their fall. So, I think that's what they're worried about, and so they're trying to blame the problems in healthcare on alternative medicine and as a way of really disguising the real truth of the matter.
Indeed. Well, certainly far more problems with conventional drugs than with these natural
yeah.
remedies by a factor of, 100C, 100C,
yeah.
To use homeopathic term. What's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? What are some resources that people might want to avail themselves of?
Well, my website, homeopathic.com, is something I'm very proud of. And at my website, I have an ebook. If anyone out there has a serious interest in research, my ebook is the thing to get because it's called Evidence-Based Homeopathic Family Medicine. Now, what that means is that it's a homeopathic medicine guidebook that you can use to treat yourself and your family for a whole lot of different ailments. And I give materia medica, remedies that are specific, and give you details of which remedy should be indicated and when. But the reason why it's an ebook is that I update it every couple months based on whatever research exists. So there's reference to and description of like 300 clinical trials published in peer-reviewed journals. So if you ever want to find out what research has been done on homeopathy and arthritis, it's there. Fibromyalgia, asthma. The longest chapter in the whole book is on cancer because that's one of my special interests. And I wrote the chapter in Oxford University Press's textbook on integrative oncology. And I did the same thing in pain management. There's a leading medical textbook called Weiner's Pain Management. So, there's certain areas that actually the whole book is pretty strong. And there's, but the other thing, if people want free access to information, at the Huffington Post, I've got a pretty active blog where I've written about 40 articles and been averaging 1,000 comments per article. So I'm both loved and hated there.
Indeed.
And so if you look under my name, Dana Ullman, at the Huffington Post, you'll see a variety of articles, and then you can choose to read whichever one you want.
Is there such a thing as a directory of homeopathic practitioners so that people can get reliable help in this regard?
Yes. There are different online directories. At the National Center for Homeopathy, which one of the simplest way to get to that is homeopathic.org. If you also look under the National Center for Homeopathy, they have a directory. Now, however, to be in that directory, you need to be a member of the organization and you need to pay a minor fee. So, there's a lot of people that aren't in there because they don't want to or need to advertise in any shape, way, or form. And so some of the better practitioners are not there. So, the other thing that I do is I do provide referrals for people. I charge for that. There's a fee for that referral. That's the other way is you can talk to someone and ask them who they recommend.
Indeed. So I want to thank you very much for joining us, Dana Ullman. The website is homeopathic.org. And congratulations on a great career advocating for homeopathy and natural medicine.
Thanks a lot, Ron. I really appreciate your long-term involvement. I know being an MD in the field, it has its own challenges, and, you've stuck with it, and best of all, you've taken the role to educate other people about our broad field. So much rep to you. Okay?
Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks very much for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.